And action. Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 92, and it is 17th of August 2020, and we are back from a summer vacation. So it was, I think it was 4 weeks, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Who are you people? What are we doing here? What am I?
Yes. You were officially still in vacation today, right?
You're starting today. Yes. Summer. Yeah, today is my last day vacation. So I just came back. We've been away for a week. I've just came back this morning. So I'm like, okay. Computer, wait, how does it go on?
What's my password? Nowadays, luckily, you don't have to worry about that, because at least I have the face recognition. So
not a thing on a Mac, so I needed to type my password. So I mean, there is a touch thing also.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, indeed. Now, I've been in business for 1 week, and I still haven't been able to catch up on email. It's just brutal.
What's my password? Still didn't know this password after a week.
Yes, that as well. Anyway, so before we go into the random topics, we do have a visitor this week. But we will go there. So my name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in OneDrive SharePoint platform team. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Waldek, who are you? Let's make a quick intro.
Who am I? Yeah, exactly. My name is Waldek Mastikas. I am a head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest from, I suppose, sunny Belgium.
Yeah, very sunny today and very hot, like in the Netherlands, I think. So my name is Janneke Heekmans, and I'm a two-time MVP, recently renewed in the beginning of July. I'm a Microsoft 365 solution architect, or that's what I put on my business card. So I do a lot of things, and mainly my focus is about convincing organizations and people in organizations why they need to move to Microsoft 365, and I'm the go-to guy to talk about everything Microsoft 365 related. I don't have deep dive knowledge of everything, but I try to be there for all kinds of solutions, going from Teams and SharePoint and Exchange and Planner and Sway, some Azure stuff.
Power Apps, Power Automate 2 or not?
Well, yes, and then I divert directly to some colleagues that know a lot more about that than I do.
Which is perfectly fine.
Yeah. So I try to be able to have the initial discussions and the initial conversations, and then move on to let the deep dive go with the people that know more about all of
it. It's kind of check of all trades. That sounds like the same thing what I used to do back in when I was a Microsoft Consulting Services consultant. So basically, you were not a specialist on anything, but you were the person having the initial discussions and explaining the value add and all of that. So.
Yeah, correct. I do have some more knowledge about Teams and SharePoint, though. So I started almost 10 years ago with SharePoint, 2010. So that's where my basic knowledge is and the deep dive knowledge is. I started as a developer, still doing a lot of development as well. So that's where I focused mainly, but I try to know a lot about the whole platform.
Yeah. So that was the one thing that I wanted to ask, like, how much back do you actually go? Like, so you said that you would start with SP 2010. Was it also like that you became an architect back on in the on-prem days, or only when you were already in a cloud?
Well, that's there's a line there somewhere. So when I started right from school in SharePoint in content management, 2010 was almost just released, and I got all the old projects, of course, because all the existing people moved on to 2010. So the first few months, I got 2007 projects.
2003, PHP.
And to be fair, I think it's a good way of learning is to get something ready and then analyze code and do the maintenance. Yeah. That's absolutely a great way of learning stuff.
Yeah, so. Correct. And then a great mentor at my previous company, and for about 4 years, we did SharePoint 2010 and 2013. And then I had a lot of focus on the cloud because I thought that's going to be a big thing. It's going to move somewhere. It's going to go somewhere. The company itself had a lot of legacy customers that were still on premises. So that's where we diverted a little bit. And that's where I focused on the cloud. And that's where I became the architect. Well, it's just a title, of course, but that's where my knowledge broadened from just SharePoint to, Exchange, basically the first thing. Because
Cool. Well, and identity.
And identity, because those are the things To move into the cloud, the easiest workload to move into the cloud is Exchange, or at least that was what Microsoft was saying at that point in time. So I thought I have to learn this because people want to move their email into the cloud, and then everything else will be easy and will follow along. Well, yeah, we're 6 years later and it's not easy yet, but we'll get there.
And it's still following along, still checking
out. Still doing it, but it's fun and yeah.
No, but I mean, so why I wanted to ask about it is that, like, I wonder, like, how do you see difference between the number of things you had to know as an architect back in these days, like in the 2010, 2013 time, versus now when we are in the cloud?
Well, back in 2010, 2013, I was focused on SharePoint alone, not even on the servers and the infrastructure, because we had people to do that were networking and installing and making everything run smooth. So we only had to know the product itself, the limits and the boundaries, and some decompiling just to go into DLLs and see how Microsoft does things and how we could do it the same way or maybe better. And now with the cloud or Microsoft 365, it goes so broad. You have to keep updated on the new stuff, but don't go deep dive into everything. So as an architect, I believe you have to know what's there and what's coming, but you don't really have to completely understand how it works under the hook, because you can go learn it, read upon it when it comes along. And as an architect, I believe you have to know it when I have a discussion with a client and they come up with, we want to do this. I can propose a solution based on high level knowledge, because this and this and this exists. And then with some small notes saying, yeah, I haven't investigating it deeply, so we will have to spend time, but this is probably the way that Microsoft intended it to do and how I would do it. So let's see if it fits what you want to do. Yeah. That's the only way I believe that it's possible to do this kind of thing. If you're not specialized in something, you have to make some assumptions, and some history helps you making the good assumptions, I believe.
Well, absolutely. Understanding the old decisions and the impact of those decisions then give you insights on, okay, so because of the historical thing, most likely it works like this. And quite often that is true.
And I strongly believe that people that currently start in Microsoft 365 or in SharePoint Online, that they have a lot more issue or problems to understand the underlying bits, because we had to go decompile stuff to understand how it works. We ran into issues saying nothing more than a correlation ID, and then we go backtracing it in the ULS logs and then decompiling stuff, and then we found out this is how they do it. This is how we can work around it. Or
this is how they do it.
But now in the cloud, there's no more decompiling stuff. So we decompile sometimes a little bit of 2019, but it's not the same.
Especially those maths has divided so long time ago already. Yeah. So
and especially with the new modern stuff, it's a lot more difficult for people or for new people to understand what's underlying the system.
why it looks like it does, and what are the inferences. And there's even internally in Microsoft, with all the openly discussion, we touched the Microsoft Graph before we started recording. It's the classic debate on some people are saying, why on earth in SharePoint you don't have all of the stuff in Microsoft Graph? And it's like, well, it's historical reasons. In Microsoft Teams,
it's a lot.
In Microsoft Teams, it is a new product. It didn't have any other API service than Microsoft Graph. So of course it's Microsoft Graph.
They built their own APIs.
Yeah, they do. I know.
But also, imagine, like, I think you compare like two different things. Like, imagine that in Teams, you would be able to compose your own feed, your news feed, and extend every single little bit of them. Like, there would be a whole different thing. Yes. Right? Whereas now you have like a few different things. You can build an app, you can build a bot, but these are just few extension points comparing to SharePoint that is a whole different thing.
And that's actually a really awesome discussion point. Let's actually slightly deep dive on there, because Yannick is also a specialist on this one. So if you think about that, obviously Microsoft Teams is a kind of a shell. It's a shell to surface your functionality and then extensibility points. You can't really go crazy. You can't flip the left navigation to the right. But in SharePoint,
you just wait.
Well, theoretically, let's not go there. Now, in SharePoint, we unfortunately, we kind of thought and we told our customers that you can do that, which was actually, to be honest, it was kind of idiotic.
Because no, back in the days, it made perfect sense.
When we were doing .com sites, yes. When we were doing corporate intranets, maybe not that much. Debatable. Again, debatable. Yeah. Debatable. But is it, it doesn't, so if you think about the Microsoft, if you think about the existing discussions, think about the modernization and modern experiences in SharePoint, we're trying to get to the same direction with SharePoint as we are in the Microsoft Teams. But then there's a massive pushback from the customers. They're like, no. I want this logo to be in here. It's like, no, it's not supported. Well, then I'm going to be in on-premises. Like, no, that's not. So what's the kind of the approach? How do you approach these kind of discussions, Yannick, related on the extensibility and the future and what's being supported? Because we don't actually hear complaints about Microsoft Teams related on, I can't do X and Y and Z. But we could hear all the time about that one in SharePoint.
I do hear complaints about Microsoft Teams that the extensibility aren't enough. They announced meeting extensibility at Inspire, for example. Yeah. So those are things that customers want, and they are moving there. But they're completely new. They have their own application, and they can now build their extensibility points where they want them to be. And they have a lot more freedom because everyone is expecting all the freedom, but no one has the history of it was possible in Teams and it's not possible anymore. So you're not taking anything away. So every time Teams announce something, it's like this new thing that's coming and we're happy with it because we finally get it. While every time SharePoint announces something, it's all about what are they taking away.
Oh, you're taking it away again. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so they're taking something away. The whole thing with Microsoft Lists is the same thing. So it's the new Microsoft Lists. And the first reflex we have is what will not be supported in this new product that was supported in the thing on which it's built. And that's the difficult thing that SharePoint is facing. Now, having the discussion with customers, I see that there is a lot more understanding now than there used to be about less extensibility in SharePoint. And that's because of the fact that communication sites actually look pretty out of the box. Now, while the publishing sites at the time that they were released, they were ugly even before they were released. So we have to be honest about that.
There were data, like you talk about 3-year cycle to build a product. Yeah. So by the time we saw it, it was 3 years old. So back then, it wouldn't make perfect sense, right?
Yeah, it was running jQuery from 2 versions before. It had stuff in there that was already old before it even got released. And now with the moving cycle and everything getting released much quicker, they're accepting it and they're liking it more. And in a lot of, because we have a lot of intranet companies as well that create intranet products, and they have a lot of added value. But for the starting customer on Office 365 on SharePoint Online, a communication site is already a very big thing to have, as opposed to their old publishing intranets, which took 3 years to build as well, because an intranet project was 3 years and 200K to get something in there. Yeah, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
And now we have a discussion, and even let's say, next week we will start building it. By the time I get there next week, they have played with it, they understand it, they tried stuff out. They don't really done the information architecture correctly most of the time, but putting stuff on pages is a lot more easy than it used to be. And they get it. They sometimes want some things that aren't possible, but they get that this is what the product is. And I do understand, or they understand now, that this product has changed and evolved, and there's a lot more modern look and feel, and things will change in the next coming months. And they also do understand, because I'm a developer, I used to build and love to build stuff, but my first reflex is wait another month or 6 and probably this feature will come. I'm not building this anymore for you because it will break when it comes. Like page scheduling, the scheduled publishing feature.
Yeah. That took a while for us to address, but it eventually came. So
But I mean, like it's like with everything, right? I mean, like you have a need today, and you can either choose like, okay, because it might or might not come within some time frame, we accept not to have it, or we need to have it in the coming weeks, and we are perfectly aware of that. That whenever the thing will come from the Microsoft team, then we'll, that probably our stuff will be obsolete. But still, we need it now and not in X months, right? So I think that is just a trade-off. Whether you like, how do you deal with this new reality where updates roll in every week as opposed to once every 3 year, and you get product, and you know that for 3 years this is it.
Yeah, but that's what makes this discussion so much easier, because this is a feature, for example, the page publishing that existed before that you can bet that will come somewhere.
It depends.
In the
gets a whole new meaning, huh?
Yeah.
So do you have it? Well, it depends. Do you want it now? Or do you want to maybe?
Yeah. And it's a lot more easy to say, yeah, this is something that people are asking. It is something important. So probably this will be addressed. Do you want it now? Or do you wait for it? We don't know how long.
How much do you want it? On a scale from 0 to 10, how much do you want it?
And how much do you want to invest? Because it's all about the money. How much do you want to invest now for something that might come in the future with an update, and that you need to re-architect to work with that new thing? And you have to maintain it, and you have to do everything about it. And it's a lot easier to have that discussion than it used to be in the 3 year release cycle, because the first day I installed SharePoint 2010 and the customer asked me to build something, they were sure that they were going to run this SharePoint 2010 form for at least 6 years, because you weren't going to skip 2013.
Yeah.
Because
that's what it's quite typical. They wanted to skip the every other version.
Yeah. So they were installing 2010, they were skipping 2013 so they could run it for 6 years. And then it's a good investment, all the development.
Because kind of.
In their minds, it's
debatable. At least not something that you will throw away after a year.
But again, the investments at that time was different, because they basically had allocated like 600,000 or 1.2 million for the intranets, and then they basically created that matching business requirements, and that's it. And you run it for 5 years to get the money back and return of an investment and all of that. So
and then they were angry for another 6 months because they couldn't upgrade from 2010 to 2016 directly, and then they start all over.
And you're like, Dev, like, let's build this thing.
And then Microsoft was helping us as well with the changing add-in model always. So
we don't do that too often, right? So
anymore.
When I think about it, SharePoint add-in still
about
100%
right?
supported, introduced in 2013, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Or actually 2012, so 8 years ago. Still 100% supported also in cloud. So
yeah, I know. I was just joking.
USBs introduced 14 years ago, still a thing on-prem.
Which one?
Yeah.
Sorry?
WSBs.
Yeah, WSB. Yeah, Farm Solutions.
They're still there, still supported.
Sandbox Solutions.
Should you do them,
though? Supported in on-prem. So
yeah.
And it goes behind Sandbox Solution, not in cloud, but anyway.
Yeah.
So
if we can go back to the thing when we talked about the, like, why is this disparity between why people want to customize SharePoint versus why isn't there so much need around Teams and other things? Like, to what degree that could be related to the fact that if you look at, for example, at, I don't know, Teams, Outlook, Word, like, these are all apps, they have a purpose. Like, you use Teams to communicate, collaborate, you use Word to create files, Excel, spreadsheets, Outlook, email, and calendar, and so forth and so on. Right? So in there, like, it's not about the how you show things, it's more about the data that is in there. SharePoint, on the other hand, like, from the origin, was a CMS to build portals, meaning it was all about experience, right?
Yeah.
What if, like, would we have the same demand for customizing how things are being shown and displayed and left or right if we say, no, SharePoint is just, it's your app for news or content.
Pages and
exactly. Yeah. So it's your app for, as opposed to, it is a portal. Because, like, if you access Teams on the web, is it a portal? Like, what is a portal? Like, if you build a custom app and you expose it in Teams as a tab, is that a portal then? You know, so, like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, this is you, this is a UI thing, and then you could argue that Microsoft Teams did a better job in getting a default UI out that's better than the default UI of SharePoint. But like what? I said before, yeah, what? It's like what I said before, the new modern SharePoint isn't triggering these questions anymore, or not as many. And this modern look and feel, and why people are asking me for Teams the same thing. We want our own custom colors. In Teams, you only have three color schemes, and arguably only two are relevant to most of the people, because the high contrast one is specifically for people with a sight problem. And they're asking the same thing that they're asking in SharePoint, and that's where SharePoint is doing better than Teams, because you have all these color schemes that you could put in. Yeah, I'm not advocating for Teams versus SharePoint.
It's not a competition. It's a win-win story. Yeah. So.
And Teams has a UI that's by default there that works in most use cases, while SharePoint is now moving into this modern space, modern look and feel, transitioning over all the pages. There's still some classic UI in there. And when everything is moved over and works consistently, you will get less and less of these questions. And that's why you don't get it in Teams. And in Teams, all the extensibility is focused on adding value and not improving UI. Yeah. UI is okay-ish.
It's what it is. It is what it is, period. It is what it is. You can like it or not, but it is what it is.
And there are some things that could be improved, but what people now want is, this is okay for us. It's not the best. This could be better. This could be better. But now we want to focus on adding a bot in there that improves my actual work. Or I want to put in a tab that improves my actual work. So the extensibility focus is different on Teams than on SharePoint, because the baseline is...
I think the whole extensibility model, sorry for interrupting you there, Yannick, I think the whole extensibility model, the focus is more and more on the value add and the productivity, and really kind of like, okay, so if we're investing on this one, 50K, are we going to get money out of it? So is it actually improving the productivity enough or not? And this was a discussion in the past. It was the projects were insane.
I think it depends whom you ask. Like if you look at who are the owners of intranets back in the day, Markham, and if you ask them, like, will changing the colors or the Markham, right? You know, the
corporate communications,
internal comms, so, and if you ask them, like, how important is it that our brand shines through? Are like, no, it's the key, because for them, it's all about identity. Like we need to feel as a company, and that is worth to them 50K. So if you would ask them, would you like your teams to express the same identity, like the same font and the same colors, they would be all over it. It's just not an option. So I think it's all about the audience and what they perceive as the most important thing for their job, if you like.
Yeah, and it's also about who drives these projects at the moment.
Yes.
Because we see a shift in budgets from IT and marketing into the business itself, so the business users can spend their own money, basically, and they don't get forced upon an application. So they spend it not on how it looks, but on how it works and what helps them to achieve something. And I do agree, if you have a discussion with marketing or communications, they still want Teams to look and feel like the portal for your company. But they also understand that it's for the whole company, and that it's something that's a SaaS platform, and they cannot change everything in there. So they see that a brand or their own brand or their own identity isn't necessarily something that you have to force upon every application in your organization, and that maybe the money is better spent on outwards marketing than on inwards marketing. Because most of the people that work for your company, they like working for you, so they know your identity and your brand. Hopefully, so they don't really need to force it upon all their employees.
Or maybe they found another way. Maybe they found that instead of trying to adjust the application, maybe they need to find a different way to engage with their employees, right? Because I think it's like the whole thing about talent wars and engagement with employees. Like I think. This is, especially now that we are all remote, I think it's even more important than ever.
Yeah.
Right. So because it's you need to bring everybody together.
Yeah.
Right. Because like we are not in offices. Like there is, like we are less surrounded with corporate things, and we are in our own homes working on devices, and we see our houses most of the time. Right. So how can you bring this idea of company together and we as a team to your home office? Right. So I think that there's still a thing, but I think that there is the branding of the applications that you use. I think that that notion might be fading away, and maybe they're trying to find now more modern, if you like, equivalents of that.
Yeah. You can have a, you can argue about does adding your corporate logo to Microsoft Teams make someone feel better at your company, or do you want to do something else? And maybe that's where the shift is, more like weekly meetings or sync ups or having a coffee chat on Teams to do all of this. It's more valuable and more branding your company than putting the logo and the colors in Teams or on SharePoint. Because the SharePoint intranet, it's nice and it's cool that it looks and feels like your company, but that's the least important thing about the intranet. It has to look nice, but the content on it is more important. The engagement you get with your employees is a lot more important to do the bonding than putting the logo somewhere.
Yeah, and I think maybe that is also the last thing, and then that we go to articles.
No. I have a few things which I wanted to discuss as well.
Sorry.
No worries. Because it's not just about branding, but anyway. So
I think maybe it's the whole thing, you know, that time change. Like, in the past, it was perfectly fine to smoke in a restaurant. Now it's not.
Yeah.
In the past, the marketing was expressed
it's
like
not
it was. Like
in Netherlands or in Germany? No, just kidding.
No.
Right, I still remember back in the 90s or whenever you visited Germany and people were smoking the McDonald's inside of it. Like,
and you're like, what? Why? Right? And I mean, so maybe that is exactly the same thing. Like a few years back, your corporate identity was expressed through logo and colors and logotype, like all over the place, everywhere you would go. Nowadays, maybe that's with the new stream of folks. Maybe that is no longer the case. Maybe that mindset has changed.
Yeah, I think that it has significantly changed in many perspectives. Now, there was two things that I wanted to ask from Yannick as well. So, I know that you, as an example, you at some point piloted the embedding of a SharePoint portals directly in Teams. You were one of the guys who cracked the code, and then we needed to do some documentation.
Decompiled Teams!
Yes. Yeah. Which was good. No. It's all for the good. So it's always this classic competition on MVPs cracking and hacking things, and then we're like, okay, we need to document something. Because obviously there's better and cleaner solution coming pretty soon. Ignite is coming pretty soon, and then we'll have additional news on many things. But related on all of this kind of embedding SharePoint inside of Teams and the Teams being the intranet, or is it the SharePoint intranet, or how do we do this all together? What is your kind of ideal setup, what you would actually recommend for your customers? So whatever you actually go, and if customers like, well, tell me how I should be doing things. Well, how do you approach this kind of models?
Yeah, currently I go Teams first. Mostly. So Teams first, collaboration, especially in this remote working environment. Everybody will be working in Teams, doing the calling, having the meetings, having the chats. So I want to be Teams first. That's the easiest approach. Then you have to do and go look in all of the Office 365, Microsoft 365 groups and membership and provisioning, because you want to control it, and templating. So all of that in Teams. But of course, for news and intranet, there's SharePoint, which SharePoint does best and better than Teams does it. So my ideal setup, which is not possible at the moment, would be to embed a communication site in its whole in Microsoft Teams as a personal app. So I will push it out. It will be the hub or the intranet or something in the left rail of Microsoft Teams and show everything from that communication site.
What do you mean that it's not possible? It is documented that you can do that.
Yeah, but you can only embed a page and not the navigation. So I can only embed.
There are limitations on this.
Yeah. So the limits are currently blocking us from doing the whole thing, because ideally we could say that Teams is your entry point into everything. And currently it isn't, because of the fact that we cannot have the global navigation and the local navigation of a SharePoint communication site directly into Teams, because it will strip out the surroundings, which is annoying, but I know stuff is in the works, so maybe it will come. But that's one thing.
The question is when. So
yeah. Okay. So it's ideally we can pin SharePoint and some SharePoint sites in the left rail or in a Teams itself, so we can bring in the value of the pages of SharePoint into Teams, including the navigation. So that's the one approach. There is a discussion if email should be in there as well, but people stick to their Outlook client or their web Outlook client anyway, so maybe they can do it with two. So that's my approach. It's Teams first, although I am 9 years in SharePoint. I see that Teams is becoming very important for the organizations, and that Teams is built on top of SharePoint, so we currently try to leverage all the SharePoint features from inside Teams instead of directing users to Teams to SharePoint itself.
And obviously that the integration is getting better and better gradually. And there will be good announcements coming in Ignite as an example. So in a few weeks.
By the end of September.
So the other question, which I wanted to quickly add as well, because we're asking this from the partners always, is that how do you see the transition of the partner opportunities from on-premises to the cloud? So is it impacting the revenue flow? Is it impacting profits or customer interest? Is there more customers reach? Is there more opportunities? Or how do you see this transition?
Yes.
All of the above. Thing is that it's shifting. We're a small consulting company. We're 8 consultants at the moment. So we're a small consulting company, and we see that where we used to do large projects that took weeks or months to do, that a lot of things are now smaller, in consultancy terms, weeks instead of months, of doing things, because they can get value much quicker. We help them with some information architecture, with some structure, understanding groups versus just a non-group connected team site, communication sites, and then they go play with it within a defined boundary, and then they want something more, probably after 2-3 months, and we come back for some consultancy as well. So it's more about us being there as the experts, and they call us at the times that they need it, as opposed to with the on-premises thing, nobody understood SharePoint, only we did, or at least we thought that. So we were there for months at the customers, just being there, making them understand it, helping them with the new version because some things changed. The menu changed from left to right and from right to left again. And you have to be there for them. And with this new Microsoft 365 that's more modern, that's a lot user-friendlier, they can figure things out themselves. Only when they're stuck or they need some custom development, some specific web part, they get back to us. So there is a lot of opportunity and a lot more opportunity. Only it's shifting from being there all the time to doing smaller consultancy gigs, helping them out for a specific thing and then moving on. And then they get back to us if you did it good. You have a recurring customer. Yeah, that's a bit the challenge. Because of the 8 people as well, you have to make sure that they have work. And it was easier before. You find a big project.
Basically booked. Yeah.
You put 6 people on it for the next 6 months, and then it's like this, and it's all okay. You can find your next big project for the next 6 months. Now we're continually searching for smaller opportunities, a lot more shifting focus. During the week, you have to spend time at multiple customers. So it's a bit different, but it's fun as well. And it's in the cloud, it's not on premises, so everything is good.
And in terms of knowledge and experience, like, do you feel you need to stay more in the game and spend more time learning things, staying up to date, or is it still in balance?
I think it's still in balance, but where I was on premises, I read stuff and I tried it out. And as I said before, now I just read stuff and I don't try it out. I try to remember where I've read it, store it, so that when something comes up, I can say, I've read something about this. I hope I can find it again.
Find it there in this space. It's not there.
It's somewhere over there. I go find it. I read up on it. And that's when I do the deep dive. I know nothing about Microsoft Lists at the moment. I know nothing about the Project Oakley thing.
You've been working with Lists since 2010.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So I've been working with Lists, but I don't know what's the new thing of Microsoft Lists. The Oakley thing in Teams. Yeah, but it might not be new. But the thing is that I've read that there's something there.
Yeah.
And if someone asks about it, then I will read up. Because it's impossible for the whole world of Microsoft 365 to keep up.
Yep.
It's impossible on the functionality side, because we're up until now, we're only talking about what's user-facing at Teams, SharePoint, but then you've got all the security stuff as well, information protection and sensitivity labels and all the things in there.
Yep.
Users don't really see it, but it's also important. It's impossible to keep up on everything.
Just and then there is also the backend in Azure, which you can build, which is like 20 million services and platform components that you can use to build your applications.
Yeah.
Which you also need to know.
Yeah, you need to know something about it. So I know things about Azure Functions because I've built them. I know things about Logic Apps because I've built them. I know a little bit about API management, but I have never used it. I know that it exists and that it's useful in certain scenarios. And when it comes up that some customer needs it, I know at least that Azure has something.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I will try to learn it or find someone who knows about it. And I just give it away. But that's how I roll now. It's the easiest way to keep updated. People say, Yannick, you're always up to date. No, I'm not. I just read some headlines and I know things are coming. And when things come up, I have a good mind of remembering what I've read somewhere before. And then I have a good system of finding back what I've read. And that's the only way for me to keep up.
So how do you stay up to date? What are your, I don't know, let's say top three resources to go to?
Twitter. So I have a curated feed of people that tweet cool stuff. And then I go save it in a reading list so I can read it later. I have a Feedly with a lot of RSS feeds for good blogs. And maybe that's it. I don't even have a third one.
So videos, and YouTube podcasts.
No. So I do podcasts. I listen to some podcasts, but it's not my main source of information. Okay. So I don't think it would be the make my top three because I don't have a third one. So it probably will make top three then. But I don't do YouTube. I don't watch videos. It takes too much of my time. So people that create it, good for you. But I really don't have time to watch 10 minutes of video of all the videos that come out. So and then probably the MVP sessions that we get is a good source of information as well. So the interactions with the product groups will probably be one of my top information sources as well. So probably those is the best way for me to keep up. I've That's been good. Thinking about sharing my list of Feedly feeds or podcasts.
Yeah. Sharing
or
is like caring.
That. So I might share it out later.
Yeah. And on the sharing of those kind of things, like so at least personally, I started doing this already many, many, many years ago, which people seem to know already. But the sharing is caring mentality started from something like, hey, I don't care if somebody actually wants to use this or is it useful for them, but I will just expose it to everybody. Yeah. And then if they find it valuable, that's awesome. But it's one of those things where if you start doing that as a every single thing what you do, it starts generating goodwill and then it starts generating something bigger, which is always good. So it's good to see that a lot of the graphics which we're seeing even nowadays are coming from the graphics decks which I created like 5 years ago and shared them out. And then people are using the same graphics, which is awesome because it saves time.
You are so much ahead of game. Yes. It's like you're creating graphics 5 years ago for now.
Yes. All the things what we've done at some point. Anyway, so let's do some articles and then we need to close up. Let's be relatively fast on the articles. And there's so much to actually, we have a backlog of like 5 to 6 weeks. So we just took some of these and wanted to talk about obviously the latest ones, latest capabilities in Microsoft Teams. The TeamFox hasn't been really active since this one. I think there's one new article after this one. Seems to indicate that everybody is having some time off. Apparently, it's been really hot in Seattle, which is good. Absolutely. Ignite is coming. But cool stuff coming in Teams. Really good summary on all of the things, what's happening. I like the format which we seem to be doing now with Teams and SharePoint related on mentioning and then referencing the latest things. So application lifecycle management control, templating, all of that stuff, really cool stuff coming on the Microsoft Teams side as well. The same kind of a summary article from SharePoint side. On SharePoint side, Chris and Mark are also doing the Infrazone, but they interviewed John Sanders, who, by the way, owns the SharePoint Pages and Web Parts experiences. So he's a really good guy to talk about what's happening over there. There's a lot of interesting stuff in the pipeline. But again, really cool stuff. We have we'll cover this one in a second, but new employee onboarding hub, which is really, I don't know if you, Yannick, as an example, had a chance to already check this out, but I think these are the ones which benefit the partners and customers for sure to get the structures available, and then they can start customizing the template based on their requirements.
Yeah, it looks very awesome to you. So I've been thinking about implementing it at our company because of the three-step process, the internal one and the external one, and the idea of sharing out information and a site to a new hire on the day that he or she signs her contract, and not just wait until day one on coming into the company. So you start building a connection already as soon as they sign the contract, because in Belgium, it might take 2-3 months before someone actually switches the company. So that's it's an interesting idea. So I'm not sure if I will be using this template, but the idea itself is quite good.
And that's what all of these templates are basically intended for, inspiration. And then people can get good ideas and then they repackage them, or all of the templates are also open source. So you can actually package own versions of those templates as well if you want, which is pretty cool. Anyway, what else is there? The SharePoint migration tool supports migrating content from SharePoint Server 2016. So we really want people to move to the cloud. We want to make this as easy as possible. It's not obviously, should I even say this? On-prem is not dead, it's certainly not, but the innovation happens in the cloud. We're a cloud-first company, and the best and the awesome capabilities are there. This one, by the way, is really interesting as well. I didn't have a tab open on it, but Intelligent Intranet, great training package available now, where we actually talk through the Intelligent Intranet capabilities. We talk about embedding, we talk about engaging and implementing training your employees also in using these things. So really, really good, great resource. Team Burkhardt updates, Microsoft Teams app is basically now getting rolled out. But then I saw some Twitter tweets just as recently as today that somebody had it, but now it's gone. So that might be implicating that there was some sort of a regression, and that it will come back pretty soon. And improvements, quick edit experiences, a lot of stuff actually happening, making things more and more better and integrated, and also integrated with Teams as well. So really cool stuff, absolutely. Now, the Intelligent Intranet stuff, which I didn't have an article open, well, I didn't have a tab open, but this is really, really cool stuff related on implementing an intelligent intranet. And then we have videos on how to get started implementing things and guidance videos. And a lot of the functionality videos are done by Bit Debiani. She's a senior program manager, also actually responsible for our EDU experiences, but she's really good on explaining things and how do you design, what are the implications and all of that. So really cool stuff as well. We talked about the new employee onboarding hub. So this is a new template in the Lookbook site. So you can easily get it provisioned to your site, your tenant. You have to be a tenant administrator for this one. We are, by the way, reducing the permission requirements for most of the templates pretty soon in the Lookbook. So you can have to be just a site collection administrator, no longer a tenant administrator, which is pretty cool. But this one has such a big setup that you need to be a tenant administrator because it has multiple site collections and hub and all of that getting provisioned as well. The other one kind of related on that one from Depiani is the EDU template. So we released this also a few weeks back. So basically a staff template, class template, and a school portal template. And this are really targeted for schools and EDU purposes as well. And the staff and class templates are actually targeted to be used together with Microsoft Teams. So you basically create the staff experience in Teams, and then you apply this template on top of the SharePoint sign behind the scenes and get an optimal setup. It's really, really cool thing as well. And everything is step-by-step guidance and documentations available as well. And by the way, all of these templates, what you can see is today, if it's the onboarding, the new employee onboarding, or this, like I said before, all open source. So you can actually pull down the template, modify that, use it personally within your tenant, not through the lookbook, but through the PowerShell or code, which is pretty cool. And this one is really cool from Microsoft Teams tab. So single sign-on support is coming now, Microsoft Teams tab. So a better way of authenticating finally, because you are already authenticated on Teams. It does make sense that you don't have to do another authentication against the application which you're accessing because you have the identity already. So, and that's getting now GA'd and additional documentation on that. Frictionless app development and enablement with the new Teams app submission API. And this is really around submission of the solution directly to the tenant app catalog and automating that process with the Microsoft Graph API. And also the Microsoft Teams VS Code extensions are using exactly the same API as well. We're just debating on this one before we started recording. Is this something what somebody's going to use in production? Debatable maybe, but at least when you're doing if your partner do testing and automate the test deployments and all of that, why not? And while you were saying that if you are a partner and you're not using AppSource, then maybe you want to use this.
Yeah, exactly.
Solution.
Yeah, exactly. Like being ISV, if you don't distribute the application that you have built through a marketplace, well, yeah, then you can use the API to build your own installer and simplify deployment of your app.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's also the validate API nowadays as well, which is really cool. So you're able to validate your package to make sure that it's matching what is being required
for. That is important. Like if you have CI/CD for a product, that is key. Yeah. That is really prerequisite that you know that every single change you put in product, that you can validate it ahead of time, that's still solid as opposed to, well, I mean, if you have that inside an extension, well, developer might or might not check it. But if you can integrate that in your script, well, then it's being reinforced on every change automatically. So it's really cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this one is interesting. MSAL 2.0 are now generally available to support authorization code flow. So MSA 2.0 is out. And there's an article coming up pretty soon related on SPFX on that one, but this is already a good start. So we're finally having 2.0 out, and we're able to start implementing the scenarios based on this. We'll talk about the other implications in a second. This one is really cool from the SharePoint side of the house from 16th of July, so slightly older. A month old already, but SharePoint Framework 1.11 is out with support of AppSource publishing as well. You have to be in a SharePoint Framework 1.11 to be able to publish to AppSource or to Office Store, so in the SharePoint Store. But really, really cool. It's finally getting supported fully. And we strongly recommend people to take advantage of this option, absolutely. So really cool to start seeing the submissions pouring in as well. On the sample side of the house, Yannick, you wrote this one. You want to explain what it is and why it's so cool? It is really cool.
It is cool. It's a who's who. People search SharePoint Framework Web Parts. So it basically shows users that are available in your organizational directory and lists them with the people component from Office UI Fabric. Now, the cool part about this is the fact that it's based upon Graph and not about on SharePoint search. So initially, and most of the times that I have to implement this, I base myself on the people search from SharePoint. Now, with this specific company for which we try to build or change this, the fact is that their profiles aren't updated. So they disable their users in Azure Active Directory. They don't delete them in Azure Active Directory. And as a result, their profile in SharePoint isn't removed. So they got a lot of profiles showing in their people search that aren't relevant anymore. And it's difficult to, how shall I say it, to filter out those that aren't at the company anymore, which was a problem. In addition, there are a lot of properties in Azure Active Directory that don't get synchronized into the SharePoint user profile. And of course, this specific customer wanted to show properties that aren't in the SharePoint user profile. So that's my first approach, or that's the reason why I started looking at Graph. And now with some recent additions into the beta endpoint, because it still uses the beta endpoint, you can have filters and full text search on the display name and the, I believe, UPN in Graph. So basically all the features are currently there to create a people search report based on Graph instead of on SharePoint search. So that's why I did this. And then I integrated the live people card, which isn't supported. So the out-of-the-box people.
This one here. Yeah. That's one.
Because it was a request from the customer as well to have this out-of-the-box experience. And some people smarter than me found out how this works. And I just implemented it in this webpart. But the ideas are, you see here, there's a future improvements that are still to be done. Currently, it doesn't load the profile pictures yet on the first page. I didn't have time to put it in, but it will be there because it is a requirement, and then pages as well. But there's Graph has a limitation on pages because you get a next link token, but you don't get a previous link token. So I can move to the next page, but I can never move back until I reset the page, because there's no way that Graph, once you do a request for the second page, it doesn't tell you or give you an ability to fetch the previous result.
Well, but I mean, it makes sense, right? Because you have the data already, and that is an API meant to give you more stuff. Yeah. But you already have the page you had, so you just keep that internally as your set, and then
So you have to keep it and store it, and then you have to find session storage, maybe, but that's limited in size, and then you have to look at IndexedDB, or you have to store it in the HTML source codes and hide it.
Memory, store it in memory, or cache,
memory. Yeah, so there are a lot of ways to solve this, but I left on vacation, and I didn't solve it before I left on vacation, so it's something that needs to be done. And then some usability features. But basically, this is production ready. I really like how it works. And it's based upon, that's also something that I put in here, I think. It's based upon a lot of work that's done by two other samples and by the modern search web arts. They have an awesome source code available. They have a great structure, and they solved a lot of things that I could just steal. Reuse, which made it very simple to do a lot of functionality in here, especially on the configuration side of things. So it's a lot of fun.
That's the whole point of having these samples available and easily available. Everybody can benefit out of it. And then the same persons from who you benefit from can come in here and see, oh, that's a great way of consuming my stuff. And then they can extend their stuff based on your implementation.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of working as a community.
It is the beauty. Because the search box web part you see on the screen there that I can use to search is the one from the modern search. So I didn't build my own search web part. I just made or used the dynamic connectivity, dynamic data functionality in SharePoint framework to accept input from somewhere else. And that somewhere else is an existing web part from the modern search. So I could build my UI very, very quickly there.
I was actually, to be honest, I was just wondering how easily we could embed this also in Microsoft Teams. But now that you're saying that, that's actually two different web parts.
Yeah.
And that's then embedding a page in Teams, which is a slightly different scenario than just exposing a tab or a personal application in SPFX. But again, you could have the search functionality included in the results as well. But again, debatable. So.
Yeah, I didn't do that because I don't have that use case. But I'm open for pull requests, so if someone wants to put it in the web part, why not? Because it might be a good functionality to have right inside the same web part, and then we can just expose it right inside Microsoft Teams.
Yep. Yeah.
Or just have option whether you want to accept the data from elsewhere or show search inside your...
For sure. Because currently you can already put in your free text search in the property pane of the web part. So you can decide whether, like there,
you expose it or not.
Expose it or not. So connect to something else or put your own search query in there.
Yeah. Yep.
So maybe we can add some other UI that puts the search box on top of the search results.
Done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'll put it on the list of the future.
It's the endless list to-do list. Now, using AMSL 2.0 and SharePoint framework from Marcus Müller. Marcus has been, now that the announcement came, he's been testing around the AMSL 2.0 and SharePoint framework. And it gets slightly complicated and let's get slightly, let's say, not ugly, but and there's things to be done.
There
and just for the future reference, we are working on, obviously, a native support in SharePoint framework for AMSL 2.0. So now that it's G8, we can actually do that. But because for now, we're still using 8.js because that was the only option which was available for us to take advantage because, again, dependencies and then need to be supported and released. Now, this one's from Jarpas Horst related on simplifying proactive messaging in Microsoft Teams with Microsoft Graph new API permissions. So basically, new permission sets and new permission application permissions, which can be done. Allow Teams app to read, install, upgrade, and uninstall itself for any user Teams without signed-in user. And that's actually really, really cool. Absolutely. So, well, uninstalling by yourself away from... No, anyway. So you can automate stuff. You can automate stuff.
Your that's application can install itself for itself. A team or a user. Yeah.
Yes. Now, develop Microsoft Teams personal tab using single sign-on. This is actually slightly older. So this is, I think this is before we announced the single sign-on support for Microsoft Teams from AHS. So it's a slightly older scenario, but walking through how it can be done in the old scenario and old ways together with those ASP.NET Core 3.1. So cool stuff as well. This one was from Ram Prasad, showing the correct daytime value from UTC value in SPFX web part. Classic challenges around SharePoint as the dates because they're in UTC, and then how do you convert that to a right format and present that in a right way? And this really talks about that one, using BMP.js to simplify stuff as well. So basically, there's a converted value, and based on the fields, what you're selecting from the item. Yannick Plinivox has a really nice blog post related on building Microsoft Teams client app in Blazor with BMP Core SDK preview. So BMP Core SDK is a new NuGet package, which is a Graph-first NuGet package. What's then behind of the scenes automatically falls back on the classic SharePoint REST APIs if the property which is being requested is not yet in the Graph. So it's actually a super, super clever implementation. It's still in preview and starts growing up, but really, really cool stuff. And Yannick has been helping on that. And this really shows how to get started on using it as well. So really, really cool stuff. From Hugo, adding support for Teams variants in SPFX web parts, quite important thing for the custom web parts as well. So understanding the section background and how do we do that and how do we adjust our implementation based on it. So really cool stuff explaining that model.
Well, he calls out, and this is something that maybe I can put out there as a suggestion. He calls out that the default web part that you generate when you do the framework that it isn't team aware. So maybe a suggestion there to make sure that one that it's fixed.
Because then that would help on absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Fair point. Good point. Absolutely. And this is from Aika Bas. Aika is actually coming as a visitor, I think, next week for BMP Weekly. She's a cloud advocate in Microsoft, Microsoft 365 or Microsoft Graph, and authentication in Microsoft Tabs using Microsoft Graph Toolkit, and how the toolkit makes that authentication really, really easy to use and how to get started on using that. So all cool stuff. Two more, demystifying Microsoft lists from Mark Rackley. So having a video on explaining what it is, how does it actually work, and what are the templates and advantages of doing that. I think there's a lot of excitement on the Microsoft lists, a lot of confusion as well. Is it the same as SharePoint list? Why is it looking different and all of that? All of those questions I think Mark is covering here as well. And we have plenty of more than material where we covered that as well. And then the last video is from Paolo, our Italian friend. Let's see how angry he is in here. Not too angry. It's a long-running joke when we're watching his videos. He's a good friend of ours. Accessing reading metadata fields from SharePoint Online files using Microsoft Graph. So really talking about that scenario. And what's really cool about Paolo's TechBind videos is that they're typically 5 to 10 minutes, which is kind of an optimal time. Because like Yannick, you said, there really isn't time to watch too long videos. You have to be really on the point so that people would be watching that. But these are really great references. Then when somebody has this scenario and they use Google or Bing, they actually find the video and then, woof, they get the clarification on that. But cool, let me stop presenting and let's do a quick summary and round table on closing up for today. So Yannick, you're still on vacation, clearly.
Yes.
You're coming back on the business starting from next week. Was that the case?
Next week,
what's
Monday.
What's on your schedule? What's going to happen on the autumn? Any good plans or focus areas?
We'll be doing more consultancy, of course.
Yeah.
Specific
we need the money in, absolutely.
Yeah, we need money, of course, to keep the business running. This week, I will be hopefully updating that web part with the user profiles or the profile
what
pictures.
What else would we be doing on vacation?
So. Yeah, what else? So that's one thing. And then spending time with family, of course, this week.
Yes.
And then when business starts, make sure that everybody has work and that we can make sure that everything evolves and runs smoothly. Specifically around Microsoft 365. I'll be attending Ignite, not in person, sadly. I'll be attending a lot of more events for the next year, all remote, which I find very difficult because my focus drifts immediately when I look at the screen. So it's a lot harder and a lot less invested if I do an online thing. So it's finding the new balance here. I really hope that we can get back into in-person events or find a good mix. I'll be continuing speaking. This year was my first year doing public speaking. It was the idea that I would be speaking at 7 or 8 events in the first half of the year. I never did public speaking, so it was the first time. I got a lot of events scheduled and none of them went along. So I did a lot of online meetings or online events, which is okay as well, but I really want to be on stage somewhere to do this as well. So yeah, that will be my thing, I guess, for the next couple of months.
I think there's a lot of opportunities for speaking as well, which reminded me completely. We completely missed the BNP Virtual Conference, which is coming in 1st of September, by the way.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that one. Now, that's 6 hours, and then all the recorded and 2 different tracks, but that's the BNP crew basically talking on that one. But there's a lot of other events happening as well. So the dev days, not dev days, but collab days is the new thing, SharePoint Saturdays, and then M365 Saturdays all around the world. So
we
need new blood, new people to present, absolutely. So I'm trying to personally at least reduce my presentation times. Yeah. I don't need to. I've done this way too many times.
I like it. I've got a session about the introduction into Microsoft Teams development, and it's a quite popular session. Although it's so basic and it just touches all the extensibility points, but people need someone or some people need someone to explain it, all the basics.
But I mean that makes perfect sense because like if you think about it, like there are like with everything, there are more novices, more people who start than experts. Like if you are an expert, you will find your way around it one way or the other. But if you are new to start, where do you start? Because
you either read
documentation, know what to look for. Right, so you have to have an entry point.
Yeah, so you either read documentation or you find someone speaking on an event that has a topic that might interest you. So that's the thing that I've been doing, and I hope to continue and finding topics level 100 and level 200 to talk about, and not 300 and 400, which is there are a lot of people doing that already.
It's more valuable to have the 100 and 200, to be honest. And we see that all the time.
There is room and need for all of them. So
yeah. yes. And I hope to be a little bit of an inspiration for people that are thinking about public speaking. I've been pushed by some people within Microsoft and outside to start doing this public speaking. I didn't do it before. I've been in SharePoint for 9 years, never did public speaking. I became an MVP without doing public speaking, so it is possible to do that as well. But it is fun to present. So people that are thinking about doing it, just submit some to some events, and if you get picked, make the best of it and do more and more and more.
All about practice. So, what about you, Waldeck? Anything interesting on your side?
Well, I don't know. I was away for 3 weeks.
You're starting tomorrow. You have no idea.
Exactly. So the one thing that I know is that there is no email that awaits me. I've seen something in my Teams, but it's like, if there is anything important, I will hear about it. Other than that, I have 3 weeks to catch up. Like, what's up with CLI? I saw that we have a release, or we had a release.
Yep.
I have no idea what's in there. So
that
yeah,
means like, that the team works, right? Because there's multiple people working on the CLI.
Absolutely. And like, nobody called me on vacation. Nothing dropped. There was no fire. We have a release. We had something on Twitter. So I'm not updated anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's the objective. That should be objective of every single open source project. Get to the level where it's not about the individuals. It's about the team and the project actually moving forward.
Yeah,
so
it's good to see that
on the CLI side.
Over the last weeks, I read a book about GitHub and working in the open, working on open source. And they're like,
I have it in my waiting in my list as well.
Yeah, it's very good because there are so many things that, like, some of them apparently we've been doing intuitively already, but there are so many things that appeal more to the, let's say, the maintenance side of things you do in the open. And there are so many things that they feel all, like, at times you will feel awkward, but now you know why, right? Because like there's whole dynamics, there's whole extra dimension to maintaining things in the open as opposed to just create stuff, share it in the open for everybody to use, but don't support it.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different level.
That's the interesting part, and we talked about this so many times, but it's really obviously close to our heart. But we see all the time people saying, "Yeah, it's open source, it's in GitHub." That doesn't mean that it's open source. It's a completely different ballgame if you're actually unwilling to take people to contribute stuff in, and then encourage the people to actually build stuff together and build a community around that. So,
but even that, like, that comes with a cost. Like, it's not a free thing. And then, like, for one, I wasn't aware of the cognitive load that brings with it. Like, at times, it's like, yeah, let's do it. And then, who doesn't want to see their baby grow and, you know, like, go out there and get the big numbers?
That's true.
Until you're there and then you realize, huh, I didn't know that would mean this, this, and this, and this, and that. And then, but by that time, you're so invested in it, and there are other folks who count on you showing up and being there and kind of drive that. You kind of wriggle yourself in a tough spot at times. So it's really interesting read that helps you to understand, like, what does it mean? Like, what are the perks, but also what is the other side
because you commit on something, then people are waiting for you to show up, and then if you don't show up, what's going to happen?
There's an expectation. Exactly.
And we can talk about this topic again.
We will at some point in the future.
Cool. But thank you, Yannick. Good discussion. It's good to catch up on what's happening on your side. And we'll continue having absolutely discussions in the MVP channels and then outside of that channels as well. But and thank you, Waldeck. Good to have you back from the vacation. So
Thank you, everybody, for having you back.
Or listening, if you have the podcast. And thank you, Yannick. And we'll come back with the next one within a week.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.